On this week's 51%, we hear about the need to fill the vacuum of quotes by contemporary women.
Bartlett's, which is the Bible of quotations for years, out of 19,800 quotes, 5% of them were by women.
And we'll hear the story behind the song, I Will Survive. Yes, that one. The women's empowerment anthem. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
How high the moon, does it touch the stars? How high the moon, does it reach up to Mars? Though the words may be wrong to this song, we're asking how high, 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 high is the moon.
I was doing some spring cleaning and came across one of the gift books I'd received many years ago. You know the ones, the square 2-inch by 2-inch books with a theme like how to grow your own bonsai garden or, in my case, quotes from famous women. I thought, before I recycle this, I'll read some quotes and if inspired, perhaps include some on 51%. Except I wasn't inspired. I was irritated. My rough math came up with about 90% of the quotes having to do with men. Surely women have much more to say. So imagine my keen interest in learning about a book entitled Beautifully Said, Quotes by Remarkable Women and Girls Designed to Make You Think. The book is from Quotabel, a place for quotes by women and girls and the stories behind them. A personal inspiration gallery, if you will, connecting people and ideas and introducing more female role models. I spoke with Quotabel founder Pauline Weger about how she came upon the idea to assemble a collection of quotes from missing voices, contemporary women's voices, that need to be heard or read. It all started when Weger was writing a book, not the one of quotes.
And in the process, I was just like any other author where you basically get stuck at a point, and I said, okay, well, I'm going to need some sort of quotations to sprinkle throughout the book. And I found a great one by Steve Martin. And somebody had asked him, you know, how do you succeed in show business? And his remark was, be so good they can't ignore you. And I thought, that's a great quote. Now let me go find something that really captures other parts of the book and find women. And I was stunned in this day and age at how challenging it was. I would look at articles that would be 50 quotes for entrepreneurs and 25 quotes about innovation. And quotes were pervasive, yet I couldn't find quotes by women. So it got me to do some research. One of the things I'd taken away, again, from working with big corporations was you dig into it and you try to understand what's going on out there, and hired a researcher. And we actually did some primary research where we, you know, reached out to a sample size and we checked to see if what was the barrier, if people were holding back because they were quotes by women, or would they use the quotations equally. We also did some counting and we found some of the big books that are out there as the Bible of quotations really lacked the numbers. 14% overall of what was being shared were quotes by women, and Bartlett's, which is the Bible of quotations for years, out of 19,800 quotes, 5% of them were by women.
I'm sorry, 5?
5% of 19,800 quotes. And the selection of women, what was lacking throughout all of the research was we could not find quotes by entrepreneurs, scientists, inventors, technologists, coaches, adventurers. It tended to be the same few celebrities, people with a political background. It was, you know, just the same few people that came up over and over again. So the actual more important part of this whole thing was that I actually posted to a LinkedIn group that had about 100,000 people, women's group at the time. And I said, looking for great quotes by women, can you help? And I got hundreds of quotations that were suggested just in a matter of a couple of weeks. What I found were that many of them were misattributed, but the very first quote that somebody had posted was one that I loved, and it was a quotation that said, I had to learn very early not to limit myself due to others' limited imaginations. I've learned these days never to limit anyone due to my own limited imagination. And it was by Mae Jemison, and I thought that's a great quote. I've never heard of May. And it turns out she was the first African-American female astronaut. I'd have to be honest with you to say I really was not aware that we had African-American female astronaut, never mind that there have been many now, and that actually there's much more diversity in the astronaut program. And so what I really took away from this part of it was that quotations are actually the ideal entree to stories, and that Quotable, the mission, is really to use one of the most popular forms of content sharing that's out there and use it to start to introduce more diverse and, you know, a broad range of people through their stories. You know, it is pretty amazing when you start to find these females that are role models in so many different fields now. And that's really the essence of, you know, why we're trying to do what we're trying to achieve through Quotable.
Yes, it's so important that we have role models for women, for girls, particularly girls pursuing STEM, that they see role models out there. I wanted to get to the layout of the book because it's really interesting. You have it in categories, chapters, I'm not quite sure what to call it. But maybe you could talk about how you came to divvy it up the way you did and, of course, include brief biographies and just some information about the women being quoted.
So my main observation was that there's so many different roles that females play or beliefs that we have, and I was looking for a logical way through the book and also through our website to start to introduce themes. So she invents. How many times do we not hear about female inventors? And yet they're out there, and they've been out there. There's women inventors from back in the early 1900s that are patent holders. Monopoly, the earliest Monopoly game was actually invented by a woman. And so I said, okay, we need a category like invents, or she preserves, and not just preserves from preservation in terms of environmental, but preserves justice. And you know, there's a lot of ways that somebody's preserving history, an art historian, and so that would be a category. I actually reached out to a number of people that started to engage with me around this whole theme, and we talked about what the different categories would be. I think we're only just beginning. We have 21 in the book, and I really think it's, you know, they really range across a whole wide spectrum. I think we're really just scratching the surface on our she themes.
So what's next?
When you mentioned about young people, I did a workshop at a high school in March, and it was 18 students. They were primarily freshmen through junior year. And what they did with the book was we used it as a visual storytelling technique and had provided props to the students, a variety of things, office supplies, flowers, different types of, you know, paper goods and pens and all sorts of different things, and had the students, we assigned them actually one of the people in the book, and in 20 minutes said, you know, use the book to actually try to understand what the context of the quotation was and to understand the story of the person. Now go do some visual storytelling and snap a picture for Instagram. And I was astounded at the insightfulness of how the students interpreted what they had quickly read and quickly garnered from the online site and from the quotation and how they put it together. That's the type of thing that I think what we're looking for in terms of what's next is how do we use creativity, unleash creativity in order to make the stories of women you know, more prominent and not just in March for Women's History Month.
You know, you talked about She Invents before, and one of my favorite quotes is from Grace Hopper. She was a professor, programming language creator, rear admiral. Anyway, her quote is, "Probably the most dangerous phrase that anyone could use in the world today is that dreadful one, but we've always done it that way." And then for something completely different under She Laughs, here's a quote here from comedian Mindy Kaling, and she says, "Sometimes you just have to put on lip gloss and pretend to be psyched." And I just think that's so real and so great, and just want to know maybe what some of your favorite quotes are.
Oh, there's one by Robin Chase, and Robin actually was the co-founder of Zipcar, so this whole car-sharing culture. So she really is a social entrepreneur that set out to, you know, to really help the environment and do it through car sharing. And hers is, you know, I'm building the world I want to live in. You know, it's that type of field, is that, you know, you really are trying to create and invent in order to actually improve the world. And I think that has a lot of what is happening out there today in terms of people of all ages. I think they're trying to make improvements.
Any surprises?
So one surprise on this whole process was actually how difficult it is to do the sourcing. And I had people, legions of people, who wanted to help. And yet there's so many quotes shared every single day, and most of them are actually either inaccurate, out of context, or whatever. So your question was, you know, what was the surprise? When we started to talk about the people that we were researching, there were real aha moments, and it's probably the most joy out of this whole thing is you sit there and you find these stories that are pretty remarkable. One of them that surprised me was, I grew up in a very small town actually north of Boston called Manchester by the Sea, which there was just a movie by that name, but it's only a town of about 5,000 people. And there was a woman from the early 1900s who's a sculptor named Anna Coleman Ladd. And I didn't know that she was actually living in this small town back, you know, way back in the day. But she took her sculpting skills, and the Red Cross had her go over to Paris, and it was in World War One. And the weapons of that age were really all of a sudden devastating. They became much more serious in terms of the physical impact on soldiers. And so you had all of these people with, you know, facial issues and all that couldn't go back into society because of the way they looked. So they used her sculpting skills, and she made actually masks so that they could actually go back and you know, look more normal and re-engage in society. And so it was those kind of stories that I sat there and I was like, wow. In fact, they called these soldiers broken gargoyles because of the way they looked. And here's somebody that was one of the very earliest healers. She's in our She Heals section because she really helped people heal.
Wow, what a story. So do you find yourself interjecting quotes a lot in daily conversation?
Yeah, yes, I do. And again, I do the quotes, but I think it's now more of the stories. It's interesting how they're great conversation starters. I think that's one of the things that, you know, imagine a teacher who's looking for something to share, because quotations are used all the time in classrooms as writing prompts and essay topics and discussion topics. And so what we're hoping through this is that people will, you know, teachers, you could actually help them prep better.
You know, I think it bears underscoring that in addition to the quotes by contemporary, mainly contemporary women, there is a brief history, say a paragraph on each woman, and concise, but you get a strong sense of each woman's accomplishments.
Quotations, I think, you know, given that they are shared all the time, and this culture does love finding some bit of inspiration or spark for an idea, you know, I think for us it will always be, you know, when can we present something so you know a little bit about the person, and can that then be the catalyst so that you maybe do find a career or a role model that you just, you know, never had imagined knowing before.
What has been the feedback?
Little did I imagine that this would be the kind of initiative where it actually would evoke tears from people. It's very touching. The research that we did showed that when people share a quotation and it's well thought out and it's timed properly, it's seen as a gift. And I've seen that some of the people in the book, we actually reached out to all of the living people to get permissions. And some of the feedback I've had back, you know, I'll be sitting, you know, doing work someplace, and all of a sudden I'll get an email from the person, and, it, you know, it virtually creates, you know, tears for me because of how moved they were. So an example of that is Adrian Haslett Davis, who survived the Boston Marathon bombing, and she's a dancer who lost part of her leg, and a year later, came back and danced with a bionic leg that had been created by the MIT labs. And then 3 years later, ran the Boston Marathon with this basically bionic leg, right? And she's climbed mountains. And so she just, to me, is remarkable at her courage. And to hear back from her just how moved she was to be in this book, you know, I couldn't imagine that feeling when I started out on this project. Oh, one fun one was Audrey Hepburn. I actually was emailing with her son, and I thought that was just the coolest thing. And it was, we actually said, Audrey, for us, everybody knows her as this, like, classic icon from the movies, but it really wanted to, we wanted to focus on her humanitarian side, and that was really what we captured in the book. So we're always trying to find, is there something that gives you another perspective on the individual?
You have more about feedback, don't you?
There was a single dad that, these are the kind of things that also kind of bring tears to my eyes, frankly. He bought it for his 8 and 9 year old daughters. He's a military guy and thought it was important that they would find role models. And then there's a male ski coach that bought copies for every female on his ski team. And I was like, wow, these things just are very moving. In addition to, you know, the women that are buying it from all spectrums, it's the fact that it's connecting with men as well.
That was Pauline Wieger, founder of Quotable, whose first book with co-author Alicia Williamson is beautifully said, quotes by remarkable women and girls designed to make you think. Originally released as a B-side, so many DJs began playing Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive that the record company reissued it as a single. It was immediately embraced as an emblem of women's empowerment and soon became anthem among the LGBT community and survivors of all kinds. Music writer Vince Aletti joins Gaynor herself to tell the story of the recording.
My name is Vince Aletti. In 1978 and 79, I was the disco critic at Record World magazine. I wrote a weekly column about disco releases.
My name is Gloria Gaynor, and I am an international recording artist and performer.
Disco was an underground phenomena for, I'd say, 5 years before anybody seriously above ground paid attention.
It certainly seems that more and more Americans are getting more and more into the disco scene.
It was a club phenomena. It was created by DJs as a way of sustaining a whole evening of music by playing records end to end.
It brought about a kind of camaraderie that we hadn't seen in club goers, and it was a very positive, upbeat time.
Some of the records that were popular around the same time were Chic, Grace Jones, Sylvester, who was one of the most out gay performers of that period, and Donna Summer. Women have always been the strongest vocals in disco.
The one thing that disco music never got credit for is the fact that it is the first music ever to bring together people from every nationality, race, creed, color, and age group.
Never Can Say Goodbye was Gaynor's first really big hit. But she kind of slipped off the radar at the clubs.
The record company had said they were not going to renew my contract. I'd been in hospital. I'd had surgery on my spine. I was thinking about the death of my mother. I was thinking about the fact that I had been paralyzed from the waist down. People were going around the company saying the queen is dead. And there I am laying in hospital wondering what's going to happen with my life, hoping to completely survive. And while I was there, the record company called me and told me that they'd gotten a new president over from England, and that where I was very popular, and that he wanted me to record this song called Substitute. Oh, I'll be your substitute whenever you want me. I heard the song, didn't particularly like it, but I didn't care. They weren't ending my contract. I still was a recording artist. I was happy to go and do it. I get out to California with the producers and I asked them what's going to be the B-side. And they asked me what kind of songs that I like, what kind of songs that I like to sing. And I said, well, I like songs that are meaningful. I like songs that are strong, that touch people's hearts, that have good melodies. They said, mm-hmm. We think you're the one we've been waiting for to record this song that we wrote 2 years ago. And they scribbled the words down on a piece of paper, and I looked at them and said, what are you, nuts? You're going to put this on the B-side? This is a hit song. This is a hit lyric. It's a timeless lyric. Well, they said, maybe it'll get a chance one day. I'm like, if I have anything to do with it, it's going to get some play. It's going to get noticed now.
Then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how to get along.
So we recorded it, we took it to the DJ at Studio 54. We gave him a stack of them to give to his DJ friends around New York. They began to play it. People began to request it in the club, and then they began to request it on radio, because now they want to hear it on the way home, they want to hear it on the way to work. And the radio station started calling the record company asking, where is this song that we keep getting requests for? And the record company had to say, with much chagrin, you've already got it. It's on the B-side of that other song.
This was a huge comeback for her. And it was also such a strong record in what it said and how people responded to it. There was the sense of real fury in her, but also determination and success.
This song taps into the tenacity of the human spirit and just pulls up from inside of you whatever it is that gives you hope, whatever gives you strength, whatever gives you courage. You tap into that when you hear that song.
It was, you know, around this time that people became aware of AIDS. So for the gay community, a song called I Will Survive gave people a sense of determination and hope. And I think that's why it lasted and why it's still an anthem. As something that went well beyond the idea of spurning a boyfriend. People want to sing that refrain.
You know, I look out at that audience, I know they're gonna love this song. I know that it's gonna empower them, it's gonna inspire them, it's going to uplift them, and that gives me all that I need to go out and perform that song every single time.
This piece was produced by Devin Strolovich for BMP Audio and originally broadcast on PRI Studio 360. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1483.